Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Yay, Paul. I need a little, you know, fanfare, a little ooh, 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 I think, that goes with that. What do you think?
Hey, with some applause and stuff. We'll get some applause.
Okay. Boy.
You bring your own. You bring a whole peanut gallery with you every time you come in here.
This is not a peanut gallery, okay? But I will tell you something, you know, talk about the rad life. Man, we got somebody for everybody today.
I'm telling you.
Just had a rad life. Okay, we're just going to get right into it. There's a lot of stuff to cover here, and I'm sure every time this lady and I have actually started talking, we've been told to basically stop talking because other things needed to happen. So I'll just do a little background. Has it been a couple of years?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years now. A friend of mine from college.
We got to get you a little closer to the mic if you're going to really do this.
Real close. Is this okay?
Like,
is it working
better
for you? All right.
Yeah.
Is this good?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, Rod, I'm excited.
Oh, it's one of those kind of shows.
Happy belated Father's Day.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
I never heard that done in a sexy voice before. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day. Okay. So a couple of years ago, a buddy of mine who I've known from college in Switzerland, Jack Tilson.
You had to throw that in. My college in Switzerland.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well,
I could just say Cal State Long Beach or something. My college in Switzerland.
In Switzerland.
Yeah.
All right. On the mountain.
Right.
Anyway, so Jack and I went to the school in Switzerland, and we reconnected. We've kind of been in touch off and on, but then for my business, I do interior design, I had an opportunity to basically seek out some professional help to do some footage, some coverage, video being, you know, the next thing on the internet.
Sure.
I thought I'd kind of play with that. And he told me, well, interestingly enough, we have a company that does infomercials and business webisodes, I think, is what the terminology is. I said, okay, awesome, let's do it. And then to my very pleasant surprise, I found out who their on-camera talent was, somebody that I had known for a long time just from the other side of the screen, watching her at, name drop real big now, right? Better part of 10 years, I think, Bella, on CNN as an anchor.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ms. Bella Shaw.
And you had a fan club for her, didn't you? I thought you were the fan club president. No,
Paul,
maybe that
Paul,
was.
Paul, I thought that was. I gave you that.
No.
That was in private.
That was
in
private. You told me that. I see.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, no more happy birthdays for you. Or happy Father's Day.
Oh, boy.
Okay. But no, I knew of Bella. I had obviously, you know, really appreciated and admired her work on CNN. My mother is basically the reason for that, because CNN never stopped playing at home, starting with the Gulf War in 91, and it just kept it today. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sure you're either watching CNN or some other news.
She's
on
not
cable
listening.
Theater.
She's on CNN.
Right. She actually does listen.
Good.
So, you know, and so watch it, Paul. Bella interviewed me, and we did a coverage. We interviewed the chef at 90210, one of the restaurants I had done in Los Angeles. And
I love the name of that restaurant.
And
Vietnamese
then,
restaurant in Beverly Hills, 90210.
90210. It's five of them in the LA area.
What a great name.
They're not a sponsor, but if you're anywhere near 90210, go try their food. It's pretty good. Say hello to Chef Kimmy Tang, who is probably the shortest person on the cook line with the funkiest red hair.
Wow.
And tell her we said hi and we sent you over. But Bella and I also then reconnected last week when we did another one for the
Men
Essentials, which just opened, which is the men's grooming and shaving store.
Oh, yeah.
In Glendale. So I had asked her to be a guest on the show, and she said yes, and I'm thrilled to have you here.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So from CNN to OC Talk Radio, this is quite a step up here for you.
What
this
a segue. Who knew?
What is it? What is it that you call that? Like, was it second act or there's something?
This is new media. That's why she's here. She wants to experience the new media.
Well, the cool thing, the cool thing is, and we talk about this on the show all the time, right, is that you find your passion and that you pursue your passion, And I think this lady has pretty much been on that path from what?
From day one.
From day one, right. And I think the two of you guys have something in common where I think you start off in radio, didn't you?
I did. WKY Radio in Oklahoma City. Mm. It's 105 degrees.
I was on WMYK, K94 in Norfolk, Virginia. I learned to say Norfolk and not laugh.
Oh!
When did you start doing it?
I worked radio when I was in college. Yeah, on the weekends I worked 39 hours over the weekend.
Why 39 hours?
Because 40 hours is full-time.
Oh.
39 is considered part-time.
So then things don't change.
Things don't change.
They still do that.
What college did you go to?
University of Oklahoma has a great broadcast journalism school. Mm-hmm. So I graduated with a degree in journalism.
I similarly ran the University of Michigan's radio station, college radio station. That's how I got into it.
And then FM came along.
Yes.
And I was let go. The news director said, we don't think FM will stay. But meantime, we're going to phase you out. Well, as luck would have it, WKY Radio also had a television station in the building. So I just went downstairs and applied for a job and spent 7 years there until CNN called.
Which is interesting. You weren't born in Oklahoma, right?
No, my father was in the military,
right.
So I was actually born in Regensburg, Germany.
So,
and my mother's Austrian. So I have kind of a European connection.
Look
and
at
he was Texan, so kind of a European connection.
So that's pretty worldly, even by the time you ended up in Oklahoma, right?
And then, I know. Are you saying
Oklahoma is not a worldly place?
No, I'm not saying that
well,
at all.
Well, what's sad is that people say, oh, you don't look like you're from Oklahoma. Now, is that a compliment?
I don't see anything on your boots there.
You know what I mean? I have more than one tooth? I don't know, but yeah, I think Oklahomans.
How did you get the call up to the network? From Oklahoma, that's a pretty big jump up to the network.
Well, they had what they called at CNN, the Oklahoma Mafia. They had a lot of people there. Ed Turner, not related to Ted. Yeah. Different people were working. It was a very competitive market, so they looked at Oklahoma City for talent. So I joined the Oklahoma Mafia and moved to Atlanta.
Wow. So organized cable news.
Now, was that at the early days of CNN?
That was 84. I replaced Kathleen Sullivan, who had left for ABC.
Yeah.
And
they were still experimenting.
They were still experimenting. We were in the old building. It was called the Chicken Noodle Network. And it was an old country club, and Ted Turner used to walk the halls in a kind of like a bathrobe late at night. And I was warned, do not call security. It's not a homeless person. It's Ted
it's the
Turner.
Owner.
So that's good. And I started on the overnight shift.
Yeah.
And the very first day I arrived, I was only supposed to observe. Here's what you're going to be doing, blah, 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 blah. Well, Walter Mondale came out with Geraldine Ferraro as his running mate.
Big news.
And we couldn't find an anchor. And we wanted to break the story. So, Bella, you're up. That's how I made my debut at CNN.
That's really funny how that kind of stuff happens.
And it was.
Right?
I had a little exposure to CNN in those days. I started off when I came here in 80 and got into doing PR for a big Beverly Hills entertainment PR firm. And I don't remember when they opened their bureau here, but it was in Sunset on the top tower there.
Sunset and Cahuenga.
Yes, it was. And it had to be around that same time, the early 80s, because I was doing this like 83, 4, 5, somewhere in there. It had to be somewhere in that neighborhood. And when you'd go up to the CNN, we handled Mike Douglas, who they signed with a lot of fanfare because they thought that would bring some. They needed a star. They needed somebody with some heft on CNN, if you can imagine it, because it was still kind of this little upstart network, and people weren't necessarily taking
it. I remember those days. I remember watching it, and the production quality and the staging and all that stuff.
It was like cable access or something. I mean, some of the studios.
The Wild Wild West days.
The Trailblazers, the young kids running the network.
Yeah. So how was it like being there in the middle of all of that?
Yeah,
I
mean,
that was, I think I should write a screenplay or a book about it, because there was a lot going on camera and off camera, shall we say. Well, you get a bunch of young people together, and they're passionate about what they do, and there's just nothing else like it.
And that's what turned me on to this. I'm going to be 60 this year, as I keep saying. Just to remind myself that I can get over say that out loud here. It's like
you can. This is a safe place.
To admit that. This new media, what we're doing here with whatever you want to call this, internet radio, live podcasting, whatever, and other things that I've been around, feels like those days.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that early day. A lot of young people trying to recreate new mediums. Nobody had ever seen anything like CNN, and they were a trailblazer, and I think there's a new wave of new media that's coming out as well.
Absolutely. You're right, Paul. That's the future.
Yeah. Well, and the quality will come through. I mean, there's probably a lot more content because of the ease of generating the content.
Right.
But I think the quality will come through. I mean, any you spend 20 minutes on YouTube and you'll pick some nuggets out, even from people that are doing it with their own little video phone, you know.
And you're going to see YouTube, I don't know whether this is public knowledge, but they have a big studio now up in Playa del Rey, yeah. And they're talking about creating their own actual content now, and others up there, Amazon and others, trying to imitate what Netflix has
Netflix
done.
Netflix basically broke the mold, right? I mean, when they started saying we're going to release 13 episodes in one go because somebody's going to basically watch it from 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 3 o'clock in the morning and see all, I mean.
We're going to recreate the viewing, but we're going to acknowledge that people aren't necessarily stopping their life to go see must-see TV anymore.
So that's exciting. I mean, I'm listening to both of you that this is kind of a similar feeling right now to those early days of the development of cable news or, you know, other venues.
CNN,
it's pretty exciting. Actually,
CNN,
to be part of those.
You know, it's hard to imagine how groundbreaking that was when Ted Turner decided to take his little UHF station, WTBS, and he'd run it all night, and he said, I'm going to put this on a satellite and send it to other people. What? Why?
Oh, yeah.
Who cares? Who cares? Your little station.
It's going to run 24/7. How are you going to fill content 24/7?
Well, who wants to listen to news 24/7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
And then you can't turn off any, you know, it's...
It was absolutely mind-blowing what they did. And many people, it's hard to imagine now, but go back to those early days of the mid-80s, not everybody was sold that it was going to work.
That's right.
You were born basically an Army, or is it Army?
Army.
Army,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. You were very young probably when you came over. How old were you?
Well, she's very young now.
Well, she is
she's like 2 years old. So.
2 years old, sorry.
I do speak a little German when I drink wine. I'm fluent, but... You know, I understand. My mother's Austrian, so of course, you know,
well, because,
comes into play.
Because here, I mean, I've talked to Paul about this. You know, I grew up overseas. I was born overseas. I grew up overseas. Come over here, and it's interesting how your life leads you back to certain things and certain backgrounds that you come with part of your package. Where, for me, it's really easy to be in different cultures. It's really easy to be in different places. You know, it's actually the opposite. The opposite is what happened. Until I got to a certain point, I felt like I didn't belong anywhere because I had been born someplace, I lived someplace. I mean, my father was a civil engineer, so we actually were like in Abu Dhabi in the Emirates when there was nothing but sand.
Wow.
Like, I lived in a construction camp with basically a mess hall that had a couple of Indian chefs that basically cooked curry every Friday. and our weekend was we got on a dhow and basically went to a sandbank.
Wow.
That was kind of, there was nothing, absolutely nothing, that is now a green paradise, basically, in the middle of the desert, right? And so, for the longest time, I didn't feel like it belonged anywhere. And that was kind of a little depressing, but look at it. So, either through a process of denial or, you know, messing with my own head, whatever, one morning I wake up and I go, you know, it's not that I don't belong anywhere. I actually belong everywhere.
You do.
Oh, that's
and that just turned it into completely a totally different reality for me. You know, and the ultimate kind of test was when I was literally airdropped by a company that I was working with from Atlanta, because I was there for 3 years on West Peachtree, right by the Biltmore building. There.
Sure.
Yeah. And I lived in what we lovingly called the less costly, I should say, neighborhood of Buckhead, which we refer to as Buckwheat. So I lived in Buckwheat.
Buckwheat.
In Buckwheat, and I commuted like 6 minutes, I think it was, to West Peachtree. Peachtree.
Everything's Peachtree Street in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Peachtree Plaza.
Lane,
Peachtree.
Circle, Drive.
Yeah. They literally airlifted me and dropped me off on an island in the east coast of Africa, east coast of Madagascar even, Mauritius. I was dropped into Mauritius to do a project for 3 months that I had not even worked on. And if anybody's done work on islands, realizes that everything gets shipped into an island, you know, nothing, you know, and you're on an island.
Isn't that a French-owned island, Mauritius?
The cool thing about Mauritius, it's everybody's had a hand at Mauritius.
the
British had a hand in it. The French had a hand in it. The Mauritians, pretty much, if you walk the street, you will see a Buddhist temple, a Sikh shrine, you know, a mosque, a church, whatever. Everybody gets along. They conduct their business in English. They read their politics and the news in French.
Wow.
It's a really cool little place.
Wow.
But the word Mauritius, the island is so small that half of the M in Mauritius sits on the island. The rest of the world is in the ocean already, right? So to be literally airdropped into a situation like that and realize that in 3 months you had the place wired and you could pretty much pull this thing off, was actually very, very rewarding. So I'm curious because you have sort of a diverse background as well, even though you grew up in the United States mostly, right? And do you find that helped you? Did it come into play at all when you were covering news and you had that diversity already built in?
Well, I was always meeting new people because, you know, military life, you're traveling all over the place. You know, my little friends would always move.
Right.
Everybody was an Army brat. So you're just kind of used to new people all the time. But I think what really shaped me was being in Oklahoma, you know, the land of tornadoes. And now the land of earthquakes, ironically, due to the oil fracking that's going on there. But people in Oklahoma are tough because the weather is not conducive to much. Mm. And the fear of these storms, you know, the tornadoes, if you can survive that. And I remember being a little child, all the tornado warnings sounded like a bomb drill. You know, it was very, very frightening. In fact, my mom, who lived through World War II, you know, I used to tell her, we need to go into a storm shelter. And she'd say, why? I lived through World War II.
I don't need to worry about this.
I'm going to sleep. Good night. Tell me how big the tornado was in the morning. You know, so it shapes you. You're tough. You know, I mean, it's just we're survivors in Oklahoma.
What a way to grow up. I mean, we don't usually think of people like that live in different realities around the country, right?
Think about the Dust Bowl and how everybody migrated. You know, the Okies came to California.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, it's tough living there.
Well, we talked about it a little bit as far as the Midwest and the East Coast when it comes to like aging. We talk about how, you know, in California we don't do winter clothes, summer clothes. We don't put salt on our driveways. We don't do change. Period. Right? And you got people that are, you know, Midwest where it's common change of season, change of life season. Salt on the driveway. If I don't, then I'm going to trip. I don't care how old or young I am. You know, there's certain. Change is actually part of the vocabulary, and then out here, nothing gets older, nothing changes, you know, and that is, we are in the same country, but
which
it's
is
so
ironic,
diverse
though,
in experience and a background.
Because where I grew up in Michigan, for the most part. There, even though it's not as tough as Oklahoma, I don't think, but we have severe winters, and we have severe heat summers. It gets real hot and humid in the summer, and it gets real cold. It's the most miserable weather in the world, next to Oklahoma. And we have tornadoes, and we have all that kind of stuff. And yet, the culture there is about not changing. It's not very entrepreneurial, at least it wasn't in my experience. They want you to do what your dad did and live down the street, and they try and maintain this sense of solid. Everything's solid. He's got a solid job, a solid career, a solid future. And here I come to California, even the ground's not solid. You know, everything's
right.
But you're right, in the sense that we don't go through changes here, physical changes like they do in the Midwest. We're changing everything. I mean, anything that's old is 20, 30 years old. We tear stuff down and rebuild it.
Well, and that's the funny sort of duality, right? We don't deal with change. Nobody gets older, but yet we can't leave anything alone. We keep reinventing everything
constantly.
Here, right?
Mm-hmm. Constantly. There's very little history out here and compared to when you go back to the Midwest or especially the East Coast. There are homes that are 100 years old. There are communities that are hundreds of years old.
Right.
Here, we reinvent it, reimagine it, and paper it over, and it's brand new again.
Well, it's just funny. I mean, the reason why I was asking is because I'm just on a personal level, I feel that when you get a chance, well, not really a chance, it happened to be that your reality is that you experienced the diversity, challenges maybe, different environments, different cultures, then later on in life, that is actually something that you have in your toolkit. That comes in handy when you deal with certain changes that happen.
Well, see, I grew up the opposite. In the Midwest, there's very little diversity. You know, that's part of the problem. It's very vanilla.
More of you over there.
There's lots of me over there.
Lots of you.
Lots of people look like act like me. No, I felt out of place there because I wanted to be different and do other things. And it's all about conformity in my view. I don't know what it's like in Oklahoma, but in the upper Midwest, it's all about conforming, sawing off those rough edges and trying to come together. It's not about being unique and individual. That's why you come to California. You can do whatever you want. You can on roller skates going down the beach and
Nobody bats an eye.
The craziest things you see, and everybody's doing their own thing. That's why you come here.
Right. Well, I think being in a career, you know, in Oklahoma, most girls got married right out of high school.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of an old maid.
Uh-oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you had to go to Atlanta?
Looking for some young
Bless your
stuff.
Heart. No, I had to sneak that in.
I made up for lost time at the Limelight. Too bad they closed that place down.
That was a wild nightclub, wasn't it?
Oh, that was
I went
wild.
To the one in New York, the original, which was in a giant church. And it was, I could tell some stories about the limelight.
We used to call it the slime light.
The slime light. So what do you recall, like, as a major story?
Well, the one that really hit home with me, because I happened to be on the air at the time, was a little girl in Midland, Texas, little Jessica McClure.
Oh, that fell down the well?
Fell down the well. Yeah. And I happened to be on the air when they pulled her up, you know, and it was all I could do not to just cry, you know. I mean, we'd been following that story for, I can't remember how many, 48 hours, yeah, yeah, however long she was down there. But that was one of the big stories. That
was kind of one of the defining stories of CNN.
That's
that was
exactly
one of,
right.
That was one of those examples where it didn't fit into the nightly newscast.
Right.
You couldn't just tune in and get the update. Every other story before, even things like Vietnam, we just condensed it down into a little recap. But here's something that you watched and you were glued to for 48 hours. You couldn't turn the channel off.
You could not turn it off, no.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I'd forgotten about that.
Well, and people just stayed glued there and watching it. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, in the same sense that there are certain tragedies or big things. I hate to bring up the World Towers and all that, but that was one of those kind of examples, too, where you just... It was on 24 hours. You couldn't believe... You had to see what was happening.
You had to see it. Or
right
how about
now.
The coal miners that were down below?
Yeah, I remember that.
They,
yeah,
they
I remember
brought
that.
Them up. And, you know, the Malaysian jet. I mean,
yeah.
We covered, you know, you hear about that for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
happened? Nobody talks about it anymore.
Yeah, no,
whatever
no.
happened to the Malaysian jet?
Right, exactly.
Where did it go?
Which is really crazy, right? Why does that happen? Is it just the newness of the news?
Exactly, yeah.
You can only milk the story so long.
You can only...
But you see, that's the word, right? If you're milking the story for immediate gratification in terms of exposure.
Emotion.
Story, right? Emotion,
yeah.
Like to wrench that kind of reaction out of people. But the story is still there. I mean, where does it get covered? Does it get buried into like some sort of blog of somebody, you know, doing some research or some academic paper? Or where does that story go these days?
It doesn't go anywhere. It used to be that you had in-depth pieces in newspapers that would pick the story up. So Katrina's another one. I mean, everybody was just glued to the set during that whole thing.
Right.
I don't know what's happened down in New Orleans, except it never quite came back to what it was. Did they ever fix the levees? Are they ready for the next big hurricane?
They'll have an anniversary story. They usually do the one-year anniversary of a catastrophe, the second-year anniversary of a catastrophe, you know.
But there was places to do more in-depth analysis, and now we live in the immediate, in the moment, in the 24-hour news cycle, which I'm sorry to say CNN really invented here.
Mm-hmm. Things quickly become old news, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, I remember... When I was growing up in Kuwait, we had conflict is always going on around there. I mean, it was the Iraq-Iran war was going on. And we, not necessarily with TV, television, but we had radio. Mm-hmm. And I remember the old radios. You remember the flip lids and the little map on the inside of them? So my dad and my uncles would be like glued to the radio. They'd be like sitting around the table with this big, huge radio, you know, box that basically listening to every bit of news, right? So the tendency was already there.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't in the medium of television. And then I remember Gulf War. My father was there for 10 days. My mom had come out here with two bags of clothes and basically was vacationing and got stuck here. All her stuff back there basically got picked up, put in satchels of and sheets and put on top of a truck and taken to Jordan. But he was in Kuwait for 10 days during that thing. And we were glued to that. I mean, you're flipping through stations because the updates are not fast enough going on as I watch it 24/7 that I'm like an addict.
And now we have the internet, which has made us addicts on crack here. You know, we're on Twitter.
Dopamine, you know, that's what we're all on right now.
Yeah. So
it's dopamine.
Constant news.
So who's doing good job on content quality?
Who's telling the story?
Who's telling the story these days?
Well, I still am a big fan of 60 Minutes. I mean, it's been around forever, but I love Scott Pelley, and I think that they're the only ones really digging deep these days. They still have the Mike Wallace mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything else is primarily fluff, you know, and it's very opinionated now, which was different
from
when I was,
Absolutely, it's not objective.
Everybody has their own belief, and it's basically about them rather than the person they're interviewing, so it's changed.
That's an interesting question. I applaud CNN for resisting that, but I don't know how long they're going to be able to resist that siren call to become opinionated, because their ratings have suffered dramatically compared to Fox, mostly, and even MSNBC, and there's been an impulse to move away from just traditional broadcast journalism, which had a high, which goes back to the old days of CBS and Walter Cronkite, Edward R. Murrow, and the standards that we're going to tell the story without any bias.
The news used to be And again, I'll go back to Kuwait only for one reason. We never generate our own news necessarily, other than maybe local stuff. And local stuff was very little, right?
This is in Kuwait.
In Kuwait. So you'd get a newspaper, right? And the newspaper would basically have a reference to Associated Press. It would, you know, it was basically pulling stories from the wire. Okay?
Like the internet
stuff. Right. But there wasn't, other than for maybe local stuff that maybe got close to maybe being maybe negative to the royal family or something like that, that got censored a little bit, okay, there was no opinionated pieces. This was mostly objective transfer of information, and we were left to kind of your own devices to make up your own opinion, right?
Right.
That is completely not the case. And I don't know that it's the chicken or the egg. I don't know that it was the news agencies that basically started it. Because you look at the country, the way that people are, they're very polarized now. They're very opinionated now. They're very camp, your camp this or your camp that, right?
I'll stop you for one second. I just saw an interesting article on the internet. And somebody did, as we do, constant surveys. Every 20 seconds we're surveying the pulse of everybody here. But one of these studies said, what is it that you would absolutely go crazy if your kid brought home? It used to be racial. It used to be if you brought home somebody home from another ethnicity here, another race, that your parents would go crazy. Now, they're more accepting of that than they are if you brought home somebody who was left or right.
Political bent, right.
Political is more corrosive, important. That's shocking. So I, my daughter can marry anybody she wants, but don't marry a Republican. I'm a Democrat.
Again, when you have somebody like, and I'll just say, I'll pick Fox, right, that has a certain direction bent politically, right, and it wouldn't call it necessarily an agenda, but definitely a bias.
It's an agenda.
Okay, I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to be objective and nice, right? But definitely a bias, okay? The challenge is to resist, as another agency, the possibility of losing audience by not having the other bias.
It's not balanced.
That's why MSNBC was created, and they're just as biased in their viewpoint. And so you not get these two polar opposites. It's interesting to flip between the two, as I usually do. They're not even covering the same story sometimes.
Right.
So it goes back, I think, to the way it's always probably been, right, unless you start...
For example, I'll give you a real tangible example. I'm a good Irish Catholic, so the Pope comes out, very popular Pope.
Oh, you're talking about the
Pope Francis. He comes out with this thing about his encyclical about global warming.
Global warming.
It's all over. Huge things on the left-leaning channel, MSNBC. The Pope's even for this. Fox, however, is downplaying that. I flip back to them, and they're pointing out that he's still against abortion, though.
Oh, yeah.
So they're focusing on his anti-abortion stance, and MSNBC, same document, same thing happened today.
Different spin.
Well, it's the shiny object, right? Like, don't look at this big thing that's happening over here.
Yeah.
Just pay attention to the
shiny
object.
So if you only watched one, you wouldn't know that there were two or more parts of that encyclical. You wouldn't know that that document contained different ideas.
Okay, I'm sick and twisted, but I'm actually looking forward to the next election cycle see how that plays out.
Oh, my God.
Because you got Santorum, who's basically devout Catholic. You've got Boehner, who's basically, you know, sitting there, I go to church and I'm a devout Catholic. How are you going to basically
Jeb Bush, devout Catholic.
All right, how are you going to be, and also leaning towards basically appealing to the Latino community, which, again, is
Catholic,
mostly Catholic, right? Catholic. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Republican Party positions itself to a marketable position on that issue without coming out as being anti-Catholic Church, when you basically, as the Pope, has stood up and said, hey, I'm a former scientist and this is my position.
I'm going to even get more controversial. I'll go, this is going to sound a little crazy maybe here, but this is what I really believe. When I grew up as a kid, being Catholic was still something you couldn't be a politician. John F. Kennedy, when he became, he had to go down to the Baptist community and explain that the Pope was not going to tell him what to do. So, you watch at the recent reactions of this thing, and it was the same thing. Jeb Bush and Sam Torm both came out and said, well, the Pope may be our moral leader, but he doesn't dictate policy.
Yeah, stay in the Vatican, stay with the religion.
And the other part of that is this, that nobody's ever talked about this. Republican Party is obviously dominated by Southern evangelical voters, right? The people used to be in the Democratic Party and left and went to the Southern strategy and that Nixon started, and now all those people have switched. And they used to be all Democratic because they didn't want to vote for the Republicans who were part of Reconstruction and Emancipation.
Well,
and
it's whatever sells, Paul. Right. I mean, really, let's just call it like it
so
is.
Here's the, so here's the point. Look at every Supreme Court justice that's been appointed over the last few years, all the most conservative. They're all Catholics. They have appointed four or five Catholics to the court because their agenda is to overturn Roe v. Wade and abortion. So they've appointed John Roberts. They've appointed Scalito and Alito. and Clarence Thomas. They're all Catholics, so, conservative
so
Catholics.
How wild is that, that a country that was started based on religious freedom and a lack of religious persecution, okay, by people coming, escaping the old world
the
because of that, actually now is so polarized based on that, and we're all worried about the Constitution.
Yeah.
But again, you know, at the end of the day, exactly like we were talking about, how deep is that belief? How deep is that connection with the story? Is it superficial as well? Yeah, it's pretty much whatever sells. You know, give somebody a decade and they'll turn, you know, 180 degrees from their original position. And I think the sad thing is that the country expects them to do that. That we actually don't hold higher hope from people that actually are leading
the
to
Republican
basically not reverse themselves.
It's too many episodes of House of Cards, let's face it. That just
damn it, Netflix. Why do you issue these things in 30 episodes?
But you got, and I'll get off this because this is probably too political, but the Republican Party was founded as an anti-slavery party, right? Abolitionist party. And they abolished slavery. And for generations, all African Americans were Republicans in gratitude. And then somewhere over the last 20, 30 years, that flipped. And now no African Americans hardly are in that party.
It's
because
about what sells, what gets you the election, what gets you the votes. I mean, let's just, you know.
50 years ago, the Republican Party was a very isolationist. And you had FDR, and the Democrats were all about getting involved in the world.
Right.
And then now that's switched.
No, that was not. Okay. Well, so much for that.
Yeah, I don't know where all that
is. If anybody's ever wondered what we believe politically,
now, we know.
Now they know. Okay, but so that's, you know, this is what you cause when you come into
I
the room.
I feel like I'm
Bella,
moderating Crossfire. Remember that show?
I do.
Yeah.
Bring back that
Crossfire.
So here's,
I like that show.
You have a unique perspective on this. So where are we going in terms of journalism? I was asked this at a panel the other day at the Orange County Press Club, and I happened to be there with the editor of the Orange County Business Journal and myself. I was the new media kid on the block to talk about new media. And everybody's concerned, what's going to happen to serious journalism in this world of keep it short and keep it flashy and keep it emotional and keep it opinionated? What happens to true journalism?
Well,
and who's going to pay for it?
It's run amok. There's no turning back now.
You know?
And, you know, back in the day, you got both sides of the story, as Rod was talking about. Things were vetted. Now they're not. You just run with it.
Yeah.
And it's viral instantaneously.
The Drudge Report or whatever.
Well,
there's no control.
There's no cost to not vetting it either.
No. So you don't get both sides.
So we get rampant rumors. We get pieces of the puzzle. And there's nobody pulling them all together. There's no analysis anymore. There's nobody to say, make sense of this for me here.
No. And everybody's a journalist. You know, all you need is your iPhone.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, content is king. And
Periscope. We had somebody come in the other day using Periscope. This little where you can now instantly start streaming from wherever you are and reporting to your community what you're seeing.
Oh, Ustream has had it for the last 2 years.
Yeah. But
Periscope. And
Periscope,
people can ask questions while you're you know, interviewing someone. So everybody can be a journalist now.
Okay, so for you who has had a passion in this, has been involved in it from very early on in your life, okay, and you're going through transitions from whether it's the format, the venue, the medium that you're working in, what is it that you do now to continue to actually support that passion of yours?
I just embrace social media. You have to go with the flow. You have to adapt. You have to be modern. You have to reinvent yourself all the time. You can't stay stagnant. You know, and the business is always changing. You know, the news business, we started on film. I shouldn't say we, but film, and then you move to tape, and then, you know, 1 inch, 3/4 inch, you know, everything changes. I mean, walk into Best Buy, how many CDs do you see?
Oh, none. I mean, somebody showed me the other day something, and they said, well, what is this? And I said, it's a zip drive.
See?
And they're like, what is a zip drive? Yeah. Like they knew about the floppy, but this was this sort of transitionary step that they just hadn't heard about. So it's like, well, what do I do with this thing? I don't know.
But so many media companies, they still think that the transmission is their business.
I know.
So if I'm in the radio business, then I got to be in over-the-air radio because that's what radio is. No, it's audio storytelling. It's audio reporting. They won't accept moving into podcasting like NPR has. They've pioneered doing that. Or you say, I'm in the television business. What is a television show anymore? Is Howard Rosenberg, the critic for the LA Times, wrote a great piece on what is a TV show now? Is it me filming my cat do silly tricks? Is that a TV show? Doesn't have any plot, doesn't have any story, doesn't have professional actors or professional production, and yet it gets more eyeballs than the so-called TV shows.
And the networks love it because they don't have to pay anything for it.
Yeah,
right.
It's all so-called reality, which, by the way, we know isn't really reality.
Well, no, that's right. It's fake version.
Well, you remember Al Gore's? Can't remember the name of the station now, but it was on the internet. The cool thing about it was news.
Was okay? it Voice America?
No. It'll come to me. Anyway, the whole content delivery or the content development was viewer content provided.
YouTube.
People posted their stories. People posted video, whatever it was. And people that were actually on that station or that website voted it up or down. And if it actually hit the category of the top 10 stories at the hour when something was going to go on the actual cable news, it would play those stories. So the audience decided what was actually of worth to be covered or not. The whole station was crowdsourced. And that's the station he sold to Al Jazeera because it was already established as a viable station.
Yeah, he was on cable, and so they wanted to get on the cable outlets. That's what YouTube is. What a genius. YouTube makes billions of dollars and doesn't pay for a nickel for content. Other people send them the content. Mm-hmm. They put it all together in a neat package, and they sell ads around it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Bella. I think change is inevitable, right? And everything is going to change. But there's also a thing, I believe, which is, it's a pendulum swing, right? If you swing the pendulum too far to one side and you hold it there longer, at some point or the other, there is a reverse reaction.
The pendulum. I don't know, but anything's coming back.
The pendulum has broken.
What would you tell...
This is newsworthy. Paul has determined that the pendulum has broken.
What would you tell journalism students today?
Yeah,
where are you going to get a job?
You're going to have to create your own job. And what's different now is that people are one-man bands. Mm-hmm. People are doing the work of four people.
Mm-hmm.
You're based in Sydney, Australia, mm-hmm. and there's a major story. You go out and shoot it. You put the tripod up, and you do your stand-up. You write it. You come into your little room and edit it, and then you send it out on the satellite. So mm-hmm. you're doing the work of four people for the pay. It's not – they don't pay like they used to because the advertising isn't there.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to be a one-man band now.
Well, and everybody's a brand, right?
Everybody's a brand.
You know, take as many, a few selfies, post them, all of a sudden you're sort of a brand.
We have there's four or five college radio stations in Orange County here. UC Irvine, Cal State Fullerton, Fullerton College, Saddleback College, and Chapman, and somebody else I'm not thinking of. So we have interns come through here.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at them, and they're all radio, broadcast, journalist majors of some way, shape, or form. They're radio majors. And I think, where are they going to go get a job? Because there are no – they consolidated radio and bought all the stations but fired all the local staff. There are no local staffs in most of these radio stations.
I'm trying to be eternally hopeful here, okay? So I'm just going to look at both of you, and I'm just going to ask this question. Okay, for you personally,
yes,
in the midst of this, you know, sea of
– change.
Well, not only change, but sea of worthless trivia. Okay, and coverage and noise and literally noise,
noise,
a lot of noise, right? Where do you go for the quality? I know it's hard to find. Are you gravitating towards that? Do you still like the quality, or are you kind of caught in the noise now?
Mm. I'll give my answer because Bella's thinking here, so I'll give my answer. There's really only one place to get quality conversations today. That's OC Talk Radio.
There you go.
Well done.
Only one place.
Okay, well, seriously, though. I mean, is it?
I don't know where
hopeless.
I don't know. It is. I mean, print journalism. Have you ever seen how thin Time magazine is these days?
I picked up the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and it was like, I'm sorry, how many pages is this?
Yeah.
Like three pages, and
it's really shocking to see someone reading the L.A. Times. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
I used to love to read their in-depth pieces or the New York Times or the L.A. Times pieces like that. Well, on this panel, again, we talked about, you know, there's lots of new models. This is one, what we're doing here, sort of live podcasting, which I'll call internet radio. There's lots of ways to pay for these things and do stuff. And everybody's their own brand. Everybody's their own media companies. Everybody's telling their own story. You got your own YouTube channel, so you're making your own TV shows. You got your own podcast, so you're a radio broadcaster. You got a blog. You got your own publication. We're all our own media companies here. But I don't know who's doing the journalism, and I don't know who's going to pay for the journalism.
Well, and that's
particularly the investigative.
Well, and that's stuff. And that's the point. Like Bella was saying, you know, who's going to pay for it? How's it going to get paid for? Is it even seen as valuable? Is the other thing, you know?
And where would we be if we didn't have the Watergate kind of reporters or coverage or something? Or who's going to do that kind of? Who's going to buck the trend and do that kind of?
Well,
that, stuff?
That's the whistleblowers of today. Or
there's always the BBC.
The BBC.
Yeah.
I did watch a little bit of it the other day, and actually, I thought it was, you know, not opinionated.
Uh-huh.
As, you know, they were actually just telling you the story. And it was. I don't think it was an accident. I think it was on purpose. But you know, the death of that street party in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the nine people that died or something? And they were covering it, and they were repeated covering it, so it was sort of the same language, right? But it wasn't twisted one way or the other. It was just the news. And, you know, and then the news.
There were high journalistic standards you had to adhere to, and those have gone out the window now.
Well, okay, now, I will say, I've been looking at the clock. This is the first time ever that Paul has not had
stopped
a break. No. I'm not. Don't be stopping us now. We're on a flow.
Okay.
Sorry. We'll apologize to our sponsor.
I don't get a chance to talk to people of this caliber very often. I mean, appreciate the opportunity to speak to this. And I think that it's an important discussion that nobody's really having. Where is the media going to go, and what happens if it goes away?
Well, and I think the need for that honesty and that coverage and that journalism, that need didn't go away. If anything, we probably needed even more.
The Fourth
because
Estate.
Of all the noise
it was. It's
out
what
there.
Kept us all honest here. It was the unbiased view out there. And they all had it. Let's face it. They all had a bias. I mean, William Randolph Hearst was famously biased in yellow journalism and all that. He'd made all his papers.
If you paid the bills, you decided what the bias is. I mean, that's just the way the world rolls.
But we
right?
used to have a diversity. Maybe we're going back to that. We used to have lots of newspapers in Los Angeles. There were bunches of them, and you could pick and choose, and you could get one left and one right and one flashy and sensational. There was New York used to have certainly lots of newspapers like that, but. So maybe that's what the internet is. It's a rebirth of those many
voices.
Well,
let's hope that that's what it is, you know, even though it's harder to, you know, cut through all of it to find the gems, if you will. But I think the need for it is still there. Maybe it's happening on more of a local level. Maybe it's more municipality kind of coverage and exposure and conversations going on.
I think that's where it's going. I think it's going to be all local. I think you're going to see things like this station pop up all over the place, where they're going to be local publications, local because I can find out what's happening in Afghanistan anywhere for free. I don't need somebody to cut down a tree, put ink on it, drive it to my house to tell me
pay for special services, access on my TV to basically get that kind of news.
But I can't find out what's happening with the local school board, what's happening with the local bridge crossing, all this kind of local stuff nobody's covering.
I told you, I set up a page last August on Facebook called What Do You Think San Clemente, which is where I live, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I put up rules and regulations, about 10 points of rules. I thought people were going to like run the other way because I'm basically controlling how people interact on this. You've got to ask it in the form of a question. You got to engage people. You can't flame anybody. You can't, you know, troll, all this stuff. I have 1,900 people on this page since last August, right? And what was interesting is now when something happens, like we had recently, we had this. I walk up one morning and every light bulb in my house, whether it's in the fridge or otherwise, was flickering. Okay? And I went to the page. There was 20 people that already were asking, experiencing this? And within less than 5 minutes, we realized that there was a generator down from Edison. When you couldn't get into Edison's 800 number because it was
jammed
up, people were getting their news relevant to their morning, you know. And, of course, the jokes about, I thought I was having a seizure. And, you know, all this stuff, that sort of personalized interaction was taking place as well. But there was an exchange of information that was relevant to those people happening instantaneously on that local
platform. So would they be open to, for example, we do a public policy show in the mornings here, and we had somebody from Edison coming on. There's a big controversy. I guess they're trying to get... They're trying to add another transformer or something down in San Clemente, and people are fighting it because they don't want the transmission lines and all this other stuff here.
Yeah, it's above ground, and the wires are flickering. You
know, whatever it is, I don't know the details of it. But the one thing that they pointed out is that there's really only one wire that keeps Orange County on the grid, on the line here. And that's why they're trying to – their argument is they're trying to duplicate it so that they've got some redundancy.
Are you telling me that Orange County is hanging by a thread, Paul? Is that what you're saying?
Water we are. Other things, we got two trenches coming into – we've only got one source. It all comes from the Metropolitan Water District, and they only have two trenches, two pipes into LA County here.
Well, so speaking of digging deeper.
Yeah.
Okay. Two things I wanted to ask you.
I want to get political.
No, hold on. All right, you're done. You're done. You've used your quota.
Okay.
But two things, Bill. I think you just co-hosted an interesting event,
The
right?
The CNN 35-year reunion, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the pictures you had on Facebook was like, the who's who of the sort of the veterans.
About 450 people at Hilton Atlanta, and it was great to see everybody.
I say Miles O'Brien looked pretty good.
Miles O'Brien is amazing. You know, he tragically lost an arm in a freak accident, and so we had this whole monologue worked out about his arm. And unfortunately, they opened the bar too early. And no one heard, or just such a clever monologue. But, you know, we never got to really.
Well, anytime you'd like to do the monologue with Miles, he can call in on air.
Okay. And we can, yeah, because I really got to hand it to him. Uh-huh. He did a great job at the reunion. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun.
That was a blast.
Yeah.
Absolute blast. Yeah.
Okay. And digging even deeper, mm-hmm. okay, for those who have followed you on Facebook, as mm-hmm. I have. You did a little interesting something, was it a year ago? Maybe less than a year ago? Okay, you had this little special thing, way of doing dating, deal breakers?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, we got to get to that.
Yeah, I'm a widow, and it took me a long time. It's been 5 years since my husband passed away, and I just really haven't felt like dating. Mm-hmm. I became open to dating about a year ago, but I wasn't looking. I certainly wasn't on any websites, mm-hmm. you know, Match.com, Plenty of Fish, anything like that. You know,
they have one called Plenty of Fish?
Yes, they do.
Oh, my goodness.
I kept thinking that, you know, I've got all these deal breakers, because as you get older, and that's a topic of your show,
yeah.
you know, at age 50, picture a baggage for every decade of your life.
Yep. It's a lot of baggage.
You get older.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do they have kids?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the ex-wife? What's the alimony? What's their financial situation? Are they out of work? Are they ready? Do they have health issues, like mm-hmm. prostate issues?
Mm-hmm.
These can become problematic.
Right.
So I started off with a list of deal breakers, you mm-hmm. know. And, you know, they're just so strict. I just didn't really think anyone would ever qualify. I mean, to me, is it that unusual to ask for someone's tax returns, their W-2s, their
yes.
credit score report
yes.
on a first date? I mean,
oh my goodness.
I really think this is important information.
Oh
and,
my goodness.
You know, so many men would balk at that idea.
Right. I can't imagine why.
Actually, women too, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessarily gender-based. But.
So I did have my... You know, I set my goals pretty high. Another one was that I don't want to be a nurse or a purse.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
Very important.
Yeah.
And
no boy toys for you, huh?
No boy... Well...
Maybe.
I'm a cougar, is it? You know, and some guys feel that a wedding ring cuts off their circulation.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes.
So that would be bad. Now, if they belong to the Prune of the Month Club...
What is the Prune of the Month?
You got to wonder about that.
It's for low-hanging fruit. that might
wow.
be a deal breaker.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
Another one is if he dances like a frog in a blender.
Oh, I'm out.
Yeah, that
could be. Yikes.
If his comb-over starts at his eyebrows.
Oh, a little too soon there. Yeah, a little too far.
If he wears his pants so high, his voice goes up an octave. If he raves about his roommate and you find out it's his mom.
Can I just say that these sound like the antithesis of the most interesting man in the world? Is it like the most uninteresting man in the world?
If the only suit he owns is in a deck of cards.
Oh,
that's me.
If he's hooked on something and it isn't phonics. He says a former flame put out the fire years ago.
Oh, that's a bad guy.
Is that your stomach or a thunderstorm approaching?
Ooh, ouch.
And finally, if yesterday's brake fluid is still under his nails. Grooming is important.
Grooming
is very, very important.
Wow.
You know, and women really size up a man by how well they're groomed.
Yeah.
And it's just the little things. Did they wash the car?
Right.
Did they wash their hands?
Do they think ahead and get that special table at the restaurant? You know, corner table, you know, romantic spot where you can talk, where you're not blasted out. Are they thinking ahead? Can they make eye contact?
Yeah.
Are they constantly looking at their phone?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know,
especially these days.
These days, you know.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm not ashamed to admit I had certain height requirements.
Okay.
There's no man that could meet these.
There was no man for a while.
So that's a pretty intense list.
It really is.
Right?
I don't mean to sound shallow, but I just feel like I deserve the best.
Okay, so it doesn't come across as shallow, right? But I got to ask. When you made that list, was there a part of you that was basically hoping that nobody basically succeeds? I mean, you know,
I'm going to set the bar so high
that no one could succeed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I wanted someone that wasn't intimidated by the deal breakers.
Okay.
You know, that wouldn't run away. They
right.
thought, hey, well, she doesn't make
Do you have these published in a card and you pass these out when you meet people?
I am working on a book at the moment.
Say, go check these out and then come back and talk to me. Somebody approaches you at a bar and you say, yeah, well, go look at this list first and then.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I think the way that you shared them, and I've seen a bunch of these already, you know, was kind of clever. you know, there was a little visual that was fun, you know, it was a little tongue-in-cheek. And we were talking earlier before the show, so like people will tell you a lot when you use a tongue-in-cheek approach, basically,
right.
that they
yeah,
would normally right. won't tell you if you do a straight question or answer.
Because there's a little truth in that tongue there.
There's a little truth. I mean, I think you should put it out. I don't think it's any different than a lot of people that have lists, quote-unquote, you know.
Certain things you won't compromise on, you know.
Since this is a show on aging, did you have those lists when you were 20?
No. See, it's a lot different when you're 20.
Interesting. And, yeah.
It's a lot different because then it's the starving rock star artist that's so cute.
Yeah,
and
right.
he's broke, but he's cute.
Right. Yeah, right.
As you get older, mm-hmm. you know, then you're looking for more of a partnership.
Yeah.
You're, you know, and I think it's scary to date at this age.
What do you find scary
your
about
Your body
it?
Isn't as perky as it was when you were in your 20s.
Perky.
you know, it's intimidating, you
right.
know. To think of a romantic, intimate relationship with somebody when
sure.
you're in your 50s.
Sure.
I mean, it's different when you're 25, you know.
Right.
So I think there's a lot to consider, and it's very, very difficult.
So it's interesting, right? Because for somebody who's as accomplished as you, you could say that I'm comfortable in my own skin
mm-hmm.
in certain ways.
In certain ways.
And then yet, even with all of that,
because of
how societally we're kind of... The pressures are conditioned to think about ourselves in relation to other things
perky
around us.
Perky is still important to you.
Perky is still important, and you don't feel as perky. And we'll put it that way. Well, the interesting thing is we hear a lot about women having those
mm-hmm.
lists or
mm-hmm.
to-dos.
Men
or,
do,
you know,
too.
But I
yeah.
think men do, too. I think it's just we're not as, which is typical of our gender, Paul, unless you have a mic in front of you, is that we don't usually talk about stuff like that as much as maybe women should.
No.
I have to ask.
Yes.
Anybody come close?
Yes.
Okay.
It was very daunting.
Drum roll.
You know, and actually, I found him January 2nd of this year. I was going through Facebook.
Okay, why don't we just not refer to him as him since he's sitting in the room with us?
Okay. The man who can't be referred to by name.
until recently referred to as my beau.
This is breaking news, folks. This is an exclusive on Rod's show. Yes, I have a boyfriend now, and his name is David Jeffrey. And I found him on Facebook January 2nd. And I thought he looks cute, and we've got like 30 mutual friends. So I reached out to him. David at the time was on hiatus from a show that he produces for 20th Century. He was on hiatus in Cabo San Lucas. So he immediately responded because he remembered watching me on the news. You know, how's business?
Mm-hmm.
We just started talking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we texted back and forth for weeks, and then finally he said, I think we should meet Ms. Shaw, which I liked. Mm-hmm. You know, very cute. And
so he didn't say babe or something?
No, he didn't say, hey, baby. And I laid out the parameters that, you know, I have to take things slowly because mm-hmm. of the situation I'm in. And I think most guys would have taken off. He's been wonderful, very patient, very kind, very loyal. He's spoiling me, which I love. He's given me life. I think
sounds
people
like a Boy
notice.
Scout here. Loyal, trustworthy.
It's rare. It's rare. But people are commenting like, God, what are you doing, you know, at the reunion? Yeah. You just really... You know, you just look fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about
that,
you?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
you know what it is about you? You look perky now.
So we've had a lot of fun together. We've gone to the theater. We went to an Oscar party. You know, we're always doing something fun. Screenings at the Directors Guild. We mm-hmm. take in some Dodger games. David did not have any baggage. Now, so far, I haven't seen anything.
Oh, he's
laughing.
He's got something on the hall here.
David
just hasn't showed it to you.
There must be a skeleton in the closet.
David, I'm just hearing one side of the story.
David, is there a skeleton in the closet?
Not that I'm aware of.
Smart answer.
He's got a van downstairs filled with baggage. He just hasn't showed it to you yet. He gave me a tour of it. It's scary, some of it.
We live in the same town.
Oh, my goodness.
We are 5 minutes away from each other.
That
was the real shocker, which we didn't know till, you know.
You look all over the world and he's 5 minutes away from you here.
So let me get this straight. You reached out to him.
I reached out to him.
Oh, you cougar, you.
Okay.
I know.
And you reached out to him, even with your whole list of deal breakers, you reached out to him because
he had a really good look. That's what, you know.
Ah,
you
she know, goes back.
There's
that.
The list. The list just goes
the
out,
list
the
went out the door. When
very cool look about him.
And this
and,
dude,
you know,
up.
He's in the business, so we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
you know, and so.
What is he doing in the business? Can you tell us?
He's a producer of a show called Bones. And Bones was just picked up for its 11th season. David's been on since day one, the pilot. But he also is a talented filmmaker. He's, you know, done some documentaries that have won awards. And we're actually collaborating on some things I can't talk about right now. But we're collaborating. We're going to put some things together.
Okay.
So we have that side of the relationship, too. So It's been a whirlwind, and it's been fun.
So, David, what about Bella?
And then we got to wrap it up because we've got to go to another show here. We should have got this out early. We're taking advantage of all.
No. I did that on purpose because
status.
I know you.
Oh, my
God. If we got it out early, we'd be talking about only this.
This is great stuff.
I think Bella is the most amazing lady I've ever met.
Wow. Right answer.
She's a classy lady. She's got a great heart. When she went through the deal breakers initially with me over the net, I wasn't sure how to react, but then I realized a lot of these were tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
And as I've gotten to know her, she's a great friend. She's a great girlfriend. She's amazing.
Well, I'm really happy for you, Bella, mm-hmm. and we kind of talked a little bit about this mm-hmm. when we were at Men Essentials. You know, I think just from my own experience, I got married when I was 49, and it's wonderful. And I don't see anything here that isn't just great. I'm so happy for both of you. And thanks, David, for being brave enough to be on the show.
No problem.
and you know what it shows? And this is my takeaway. My wife and I have been together for a long time. I always wonder, what if something happened? Would I really go through all this to go out and find somebody again? Are men essential? Are women essential? You know, can we live alone? And I think that's the challenge that a lot of aging baby boomers face if someone dies or get divorced or whatever. Too many of them just say, I'm not going to go through this again.
I think we're too scary, too hard, whatever. As human beings, I think we're wired for social interaction.
I think so, too.
And I think yes, we could live alone, but I think we give up something when we do that. Unfortunately, through life, things come up, and we get maybe a little bit where we're scared to go and risk. And when it happens and it's good, it's beautiful. And so thanks for being here, Bella.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for sharing
the Rad Life on the Rad Life.
Enjoyed it very much.
And your bow. We're officially, you have a bow now. You have
a... No, she has a boyfriend.
A boyfriend.
And she told me I was okay to say that.
Yeah. All right, thanks so much. Rod, take us out.
Well, for anybody who is listening to us today or joined us at the end of the show, we have Bella Shaw. We have Bella Shaw, CNN veteran, and among other things that she does. Look forward to seeing what else you get involved in the future.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll stay tuned.
Stay tuned, folks.
And join us again next week.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.